Greetings and welcome to Jots and Tittles. This is Jeff Riddle, pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. And in this episode of Jots and Tittles, I want to take a look at another Dan Wallace quote. There's been some questions and controversy about the proper citation of an infamous quote from Dan Wallace that's been shared pretty liberally in the confessional bibliology circles. And I want to go back and talk about that quote a little bit. Then I want to offer another quote that essentially reinforces the one that has been widely shared among those who promote confessional bibliology. This came to light when Elijah Hickson, formerly on the pastoral staff of the Fireside Fellowship Church in Kingsport, Tennessee, posted what was to me a rather confusing article to the Evangelical Textual Criticism blog site. It was confusing to me because the article that he posted was criticizing those of us who hold to the confessional text and at least three of the contributors to the Why I Preach from the Received Text Anthology for the citation of this now infamous statement made by Dan Wallace, who is a professor of New Testament at Dallas Theological Seminary, in his foreword to the 2019 book co-edited by Hickson and Gurry, titled Myths and Mistakes in New Testament Textual Criticism. I found Hickson's article to be a bit confusing because it was all about how we had misquoted or taken out of context this quotation from Dan Wallace. And then he starts the article by incorrectly quoting the statement that's from his book he edited twice and then claiming that we had exactly quoted it as he had misquoted it. He did go back to his credit and make some corrections on that. But anyways, let me just read, if I can, the entire paragraph from page Roman numeral 12 that has the quote that many have found to be useful in understanding the views of evangelicals who have embraced modern textual criticism about the text of Scripture. So here's the wider quotation, the full paragraph. He writes, this is Dan Wallace in the foreword, quote, "These two attitudes, radical skepticism and absolute certainty, must be avoided when we examine the New Testament text. We do not have now in our critical Greek texts or any translations exactly what the authors of the New Testament wrote. Even if we did, we would not know it. There are many, many places in which the text of the New Testament is uncertain. But we also do not need to be overly skeptical. Where we should land between these two extremes is what this book addresses." End quote. Now, Hickson claims that the citation of the middle three sentences from the paragraph above has been improperly used because it was not shared in its proper context. So the part of this paragraph that has been quoted and widely shared is the middle section. "We do not have now in our critical Greek texts or any translations exactly what the authors of the New Testament wrote. Even if we did, we would not know it. There are many, many places in which the text of the New Testament is uncertain." And Hickson is saying if we just quote that part without quoting the introductory sentence and the closing sentence, or closing two sentences, then we have misrepresented what Dan Wallace really wanted to convey. And so here are two quick responses to Hickson's complaint. First of all, the citation of the middle three sentences in this paragraph from page Roman numeral 12 does not, in my humble opinion, misrepresent in any way Wallace's view, but this statement from Wallace simply illustrates and articulates what his view, Dan Wallace's view on the text of Scripture is. These words that we have quoted, I and others have quoted, are not Dan Wallace's summary of the views of those that might be described as having radical skepticism, he's not summarizing here the views of Bart Ehrman or the views of D.C. Parker. These are his own views. And so these words are a summary of his view on the text of Scripture. We do not have now in our critical Greek text or any translations exactly what the authors of the New Testament wrote. Even if we did, we would not know it. There are many, many places in which the text of the New Testament is uncertain. Now, again, this is what Dan Wallace believes. If these words were his summary of a view which he opposes, then it would have been inappropriate for anyone to use these citations outside of their wider context. If he was summarizing in these couple of sentences the views, again, of Bart Ehrman or D.C. Parker, and then someone quoted them and said, this is actually what Dan Wallace believes because he wrote this down, that would be an improper citation, obviously. But this is not an improper citation because the words cited reflect Dan Wallace's own views. And our critique of Dan Wallace is, in fact, that his view does not oppose radical skepticism, but it actually embraces and promotes skepticism as to the identity and integrity of the text. The words that are taken from this paragraph very effectively illustrate this fact. And I think basically this is the thing that bothers Hickson and others, is that this quotation from Hickson's own book is very effective, has proven very effective for opening the eyes of many to what we see as doctrinal dangers with the evangelical embrace of modern textual criticism. Second sort of response, I would say actually that reading the entire paragraph from which the citation is taken only makes Wallace's quotation even more damaging to the cause of evangelical appropriation of modern textual criticism. Wallace says at the beginning, these two attitudes, radical skepticism and absolute certainty, must be avoided when we examine the New Testament text. So Wallace is saying that absolute certainty about the text of Scripture is something that must be avoided, that it is doctrinally unhealthy, spiritually unhealthy. So you can't try to seek out certainty with respect to the text of Scripture, even absolute certainty. And this has been something Wallace has written about before. James White has picked up on this. You know, you've traded truth for certainty. But that's the whole point. We're challenging that. We don't think that dilemma that Wallace puts forward between radical skepticism on one side and absolute certainty on the other, and he's trying to carve out some middle ground between the two of them, we don't think that modern textual criticism is in any way a middle ground between radical skepticism and so-called absolute certainty. First of all, we don't think it's wrong to want to have certainty about the text of Scripture. And also, we believe that modern textual criticism is not in the middle, but it's toward the left end, towards the radical skepticism with respect to what the text of the New Testament is. Dan Wallace does say, but we also need to avoid being overly skeptical. Our critique of Wallace is that his view is not a mediating position between radical skepticism and so-called absolute certainty, but that his view embraces the same kinds of textual agnosticism which are characteristic of 21st century modern textual criticism. And this is, you know, evangelicals who have committed themselves to academic modern historical criticism, they have to play ball with those who are in the academy, who are the real gatekeepers. And so they have to use the same terms and agree with their basic presuppositions. And that's exactly what they're doing to try to get academic respectability from the academy. So I don't think it's inappropriate to take the citation that has been cited from this paragraph on page Roman numeral 12 of Dan Wallace's foreword to the book Myths and Mistakes to illustrate what is Wallace's own view about textual uncertainty. So with that said, I want to move on and look at another quotation from Daniel Wallace that also appears in the same foreword to Myths and Mistakes. And so I want to give this quotation, since there's been a question about context and so forth. I want to cite this quotation in its proper full paragraph context. And this is actually the very last paragraph that appears in Wallace's foreword to Myths and Mistakes. It's on pages Roman numeral 19 and 20. And so here is the paragraph with which Wallace concludes this foreword. He writes, "As Michael Holmes has articulated and Zachary Cole attested, the New Testament manuscripts exhibit a text that is overall in excellent shape, but certainly not in impeccable shape. It manifests, quote, micro-level fluidity and macro-level stability, end quote." And here, just again, to give it as much proper context as we possibly can, there is a footnote, and it is footnote 17. And let me just read the entire footnote so we have the proper context for this. So footnote 17, this is with reference to the quotation relating to micro-level fluidity and macro-level stability. The footnote 17 says, "Michael W. Holmes," here's the title of the article, "From Original Text to Initial Text, the Traditional Goal of New Testament Textual Criticism in Contemporary Discussion." And this article from Michael Holmes, from which this quotation is drawn, is found in The Text of the New Testament in Contemporary Research, Essays on the Status Questionis, second edition, edited by Bart D. Ehrman and Michael W. Holmes. And it's in the NTTSD series, volume 42, Leiden, Brill, 2013, page 674. And it's also quoted by Cole, Zachary Cole, in chapter 7 of the Myths and Mistakes book. So there's the full contextual citation of the footnote. So the paragraph continues. "What the authors of Myths and Mistakes insist on is that it is neither necessary nor even possible to demonstrate that we can recover the exact wording of the New Testament. But what we have is good enough," end quote. So again, this is another Dan Wallace statement, the final paragraph in his foreword to the Myths and Mistakes book. So let me offer a few observations about this quotation in its full paragraph context to demonstrate some of the concerns that we in the confessional text camp might have with the perspective that's being put forward by Dan Wallace. So first observation, Wallace here is drawing on an article by Michael W. Holmes, and he points out that Holmes's viewpoint is attested also in Zachary Cole's article in Myths and Mistakes. And this article makes the point that he's citing that the currently extant manuscripts of the New Testament show that the text is in what he calls excellent shape, but it is not in what he calls impeccable shape. So we'll come back and do some analysis on this in a moment. So his first point, the New Testament as it stands now in the manuscript, extant manuscripts, is in excellent shape, but not in impeccable shape. Second observation about his points, again, referring to Michael W. Holmes, he says that the New Testament manifests what he calls, quote, micro-level fluidity and macro-level stability, end quote. Now, what does he mean by macro-level stability, that the New Testament enjoys macro-level stability? This really isn't explained. Maybe Michael W. Holmes gives more information about it in the article, but in this quotation from Dan Wallace, he doesn't give us much more explanation of it. I assume that he means that we have something called the New Testament. We have this thing that is called the New Testament, and the New Testament consists of some 27 books. The New Testament, in contrast, say, to the Old Testament, there's really not a canonical question about what books are in the New Testament among the major traditions in what we could call the larger movement of Christianity. So Roman Catholics and Eastern Orthodox and Protestants all have a New Testament that has 27 books. So though there is stability in this, there is a New Testament, it has 27 books, and so it has this macro level stability. But when we look more closely at the individual texts of those 27 books, we find, I think, what Wallace would describe as micro-level fluidity. In other words, the texts of those books are not stable and cannot be precisely defined. Thus, they are subject to change in various scholarly editions of the Greek New Testament based on the varying opinions and conjectures of modern editors. And this idea of there being micro-level fluidity, I think, is articulated in the previous disputed quotation that's taken from page Roman numeral 12. We do not have now in our Greek, in our critical Greek text or any translations, exactly what the authors of the New Testament wrote. Even if we did, we would not know it. That's addressing his view of the micro-level fluidity or instability of the texts of the New Testament. Third observation about this quote, Wallace asserts that it is not necessary to demonstrate that we, here he uses we, the first person plural, by we, I don't think he's necessarily referring to ordinary Christians, but he's referring to modern textual critics. So he asserts it's not necessary to demonstrate that we can recover the exact wording of the New Testament. This means it is not necessary to recover the exact text of the New Testament. So one of his key points he seems to be making this final paragraph is a well-defined New Testament is not necessary for Christianity. It's not necessary. It's not a necessary goal of textual criticism, particularly as it is pursued by evangelicals who have embraced this modern empirical method. Fourth observation, he seems to be saying in this paragraph that it is not possible to demonstrate that we, again, referring to modern textual critics, can recover the exact wording of the New Testament. This means it is not possible, using the modern empirical method of textual criticism, to recover the original autograph of the New Testament. So it's not necessary, nor is it even possible, that the autograph of the New Testament might be reconstructed. And, of course, there's been the recent book that was written by Abidan Paul Shah, his doctoral dissertation that addresses the shift in the goal of modern textual criticism. And it seems that Dan Wallace is certainly embracing and saying, we really can't any longer say that the goal of New Testament textual criticism is to recover the original. That is impossible, and it's also not necessary. The fifth and final observation about this paragraph from Dan Wallace, this closing paragraph to his foreword to Myths and Mistakes. He seems to be saying that since it is neither necessary nor even possible ever to reconstruct the original text of the New Testament, we should be content simply with what we have, which is, as he puts it, good enough. So we can't really ever have the New Testament as it was written by the apostles. We have to settle for what is good enough. So I think this is another paragraph that is very enlightening. It tells us a lot about where modern evangelicals are who have embraced the modern critical text. I think that this closing paragraph on pages Roman numeral 19 and 20 is consistent with perhaps the better known quotation from Dan Wallace on page Roman numeral 12. Though Wallace can state, perhaps speaking to his evangelical audience, that the New Testament is overall in excellent shape, he must add to address the academy that it is not in impeccable shape. Now, he never defines for us which parts of the New Testament are in excellent shape and which are not in impeccable shape, which are in excellent shape and which are not in excellent shape. But going back to the quotation from page Roman numeral 12, apparently there are many, many, he repeats the word many, there are many, many places in the New Testament that we don't know exactly what the text is. For Wallace and other modern textual critics, the modern Greek New Testament is at best a close approximation of the New Testament, but it is not a definitive reconstruction of its autograph, which according to Wallace is neither necessary nor even possible. It promotes in the end a form of what we would call textual agnosticism. That's essentially what micro-level fluidity of the text is. It's a form of textual agnosticism. We don't really know what the text is, and even if we had it, we wouldn't know it, to paraphrase Wallace's words. This is precisely what conservative Reformed Protestants find to be so unsettling and alarming about this evangelical embrace of modern textual criticism. And it is the reason why we are suggesting that this approach be abandoned by conservative Reformed Protestants, confessional Christians, in favor of the alternative of simply retrieving the traditional Protestant text of the Reformation and looking to that as the standard. The authors of the anthology, the Why I Preach from the Received Text anthology, did not abuse Dan Wallace by quoting his words in their respective articles, aside from quoting the entire paragraph from which the citation they cited came from. We have not misunderstood or misrepresented the views of Dan Wallace. The point is, on the other hand, that we do understand him, but we do not agree with him. And that is really the point of contention. We don't believe that continuing to try to make use of the empirical method put forward by modern textual criticism is the best option for examining, establishing the text of the Bible, but instead, again, we would encourage retrieving the old method, looking back to the text of the Protestant Reformation. Well, I'm going to bring this Jots and Tittles to a conclusion. I hope this has been helpful and edifying for those who are listening, and I'll look forward to speaking to you in the next episode. Till then, take care and God bless.